anthropology. It's not a fun class.
Unlike business law. All right.
Exam number two are done. Well, I have a grade. I can't say that. But I did notice 18 of the 22 people took it. Y'all took it, right?
There was one person that contacted me, had an issue. I replied, they didn't get back to me, so I'm assuming I'll probably hear from them today. If not, it is what it is, but I will try to get them up and running as quick as possible.
Last exam is the final exam. It is not a cumulative exam. It is only on the stuff that we're beginning today. And what are we going to spend the rest of the semester dealing with? Contracts!
Probably one of the most important real-life subjects in this class, because you are all, at some point in your life, going to contract. And chances are you've already contracted, and chances are you contract frequently without even realizing it. And like everything, if you contract wrong, there could be significant liability that could ensue. Why? Well, they're necessary. Contract law is something that's necessary for both personal life and business.
So, knowing what's a contract, how it's formed, what are the parts, what are the potential outcomes, it's a good life skill to have, because it will avoid certain negative situations that could be costly.
Now, here's the catch.
A contract is and is not a mere promise. People make promises all the time, but can you count on a promise?
Not necessarily. So, the only way to ensure, particularly if you're engaging in commerce, business, sums of money, required or procured services, is to contract. And if you contract, you have predictability. You have consistency. And of course, most importantly, you have protections. Because the courts in our country will protect and enforce a valid legal contract.
So, if you get into a contract, it's not enough to simply say, I don't want to do what I promised to do. Because if you don't do what you promised to do in a contract, liability.
But what's the difference? What's the difference? Well, here you go.
This is a particular clever one that I'm proud of.
Let's say that you, as a simple student, are walking in.
They still have the cafeteria over in the administration building. You're in the cafeteria, and you see another student that you think is a hottie.
And you decide to ask them out on a date.
Hubba hubba. Because you know that there's a rager going on. And you don't want to go in empty-handed. You want some eye candy on your arm. So, you ask that person out.
And truth be told, they are flattered. You tell them that you will pick them up at their apartment at 10:30. The person says, oh yeah, I'm in. So that person, all excited about the opportunity to go to this party and out on a date and socialize, goes shopping. And they go out and they buy clothes. They get a haircut. They get some of that stinky stuff. Perfume, cologne, whatever. So that way they will be the hottest person in the room, which will make you look all that much better for being able to get that person. However, you do not show up. You decide that you're going to stay at home instead and watch some cat documentary on YouTube. Can the honey sue you for breach of contract? You answered that really quickly. Speaking from experience?
Maybe.
Why not?
Because it was just work. There's no liability. It was just technical promise.
I'm going to buy your car for $1,000. Was it just words?
Yeah, they're just words. There's no legal, you didn't sign anything.
Can you not have an oral contract?
Well, you didn't have to. There was nothing stated to go and buy all those things and to do all those things.
What do you mean by nothing stated?
Nowhere did the said person asking the other person to say, go buy a nice outfit, go get your hair done, go do this. That was all stuff you took upon yourself.
But they spent a lot of money.
Doesn't matter.
Shouldn't I not be able to recover from the debt that they ensued? Because of the promise of a hot date?
No.
Does anyone think, yes, they should be able to sue? Or can sue?
Courts be a lot busier.
Well, that's very true. No, 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 no. Of course not. This is not breach of contract. The reason why it's not breach of contract is all of the elements of a contract are not present. Yes?
How could, prove oral
contract? There are certain ways to prove an oral contract, such as you doing something you're not already legally obligated to do. You know, that you can show that you did something in motion to fulfill what is known as consideration. What it is you promised to do for the other person. Because that's what a contract is. There has to be an offer. One person has to make an offer to another. The other person has to accept those terms completely. And three, there has to be mutual consideration. Party A must do something for Party B in exchange for Party B doing something for Party A.
In my hypothetical,
was there really an offer that was made? You know, if you go out and buy all these things, I will take you on a date. No, not really. Was there acceptance? Yeah, the person said they would go on a date, but again, they weren't accepting any type of terms. And lastly, where is the mutual consideration? What is A going to do for B? What is B going to do for A? That has to be part of the agreement. If there are not clear terms in terms of what both parties are going to get out of the deal, you do not have a valid contract. All it is a promise. And do people break promises? All the time. Yes.
So if you added in, hypothetically, you added in instead of going to just a party, but you said, hey, I got tickets for a show, expand or whatever it is, and the agreement is stated that you pay your ticket. If they don't show up, then you can sue for the price of the ticket, correct?
Let's tweak it and get you closer to the ability to go to court. I'm going to take you for a show. I'm going to charge you $300 for a ticket. You give me the $300, I don't show up with a ticket. And then you're going to be able to win. But again, because there's no legal requirement that I actually take you along, I can say, hey, I got two tickets to a concert. You want to come? And will you pay me? I can do that till the end of days. But unless you give me something, and I don't give you something back, chances are court's not going to enforce it.
Question.
Yes.
I just went on a retreat, and
did you go anywhere fun?
Yes. I mean, it was alcohol, but it was fun.
Oh, so, Best Western?
No.
Oh.
But, so, the person put up all the money for everyone, right? And then she gave them a date to cancel by April 12th. And people didn't show up. And she put it on their credit card.
Yep.
How, that's a contract, right?
Mm.
Because they didn't cancel?
Yep, absolutely. Because you accept in advance that you're going to promise to do something, you're going to show up in exchange for, well, you're going to have a seat in exchange for paying, and if you don't show up, that's your choice. But as long as they sign something in paper, you know, they're going to be obligated to pay.
All right, any other questions? All right, well, let's keep it going. Hubba, hubba, hubba.
I decide to try my luck. Not at the Queen that I only won $10 for, but you got to call my name and I told you you would. But rather, I decide to go to Las Vegas. Why? Because there's a convention that I have to attend. But truth be told, I like crap tables. So I decide to go out and hire a female escort. Why? Because I want to look like a high roller. So I call up Ladies Unlimited and I say, can I hire a lady for this evening? The person on the other line says yes, at a rate of $100 per hour. I don't know if that's a good rate. I don't know anything about it. I'm just making up as I go along. But what? So we'll say $100 an hour. Okay, great. The terms are the lady is going to get delivered to the hotel. Then we're going to go down and we're going to go into the casino. And I'm going to go play craps. And she's going to spend 3 hours with me. And ultimately, the company's responsible for picking her up at the end of the night. Lady shows up. I decide to stay in my room and watch cat videos on YouTube. Can I get billed by the company?
Yes.
Why? What's the difference?
I have a contract.
Who says? Why is it any different than the date night?
She already got like dropped off and everything.
So? What's the difference between the date night and that other obligation? Do we have clear terms?
Yes.
What is she going to do for me?
Sure.
What am I going to do for her?
Okay.
Oh. Different scenario. Yes, in that case, I would be breach of contract, just like your retreat, and I would be responsible for paying for her services. Or whatever the agreed to penalties were.
The key to have what's known as an enforceable contract is
that mutual consideration.
Mutual consideration. To be an enforceable contract, not only must you have that, but truth be told, all of the elements must be present. And what are the elements? As I said, there has to be an offer. I will do this for you if you do this for me. There has to be complete acceptance by the other party. of whatever the offer is. FYI, as we will see when we do a deep dive on offers, if there's any attempt to counter, the original offer is dead. The original offerer now becomes the offeree. It gets confusing. But if I offer you to sell you my car for $1,000 and you turn around and say, no, $750, the positions have changed. But the original offer is dead. And once the offer is finalized, you only can accept what is offered. No more, no less. If that is accepted, suddenly you are locked in. You're locked into the offer. And then both sides must have mutual obligations to another. Consideration. I will give you my car. You'll give me $1,000 cash, American. In clean, crisp bills. This is the obvious part. And if you have at least this, you could have a legal claim. But there's more. Why? Because there's always more. The courts will only enforce a contract that is for legal purposes. Legal purposes. You cannot contract to buy an 8-ball of cocaine. Cocaine is illegal. If the person takes your money and doesn't give you that white powdery stuff, you cannot go to court and say, Your Honor, they took my money and they didn't give me drugs. It's not enforceable. Ah, this is something I deal with on a daily basis. Both parties must have capacity to contract. You cannot contract if you are incapacitated. And I don't mean necessarily knocked out. That's kind of an obvious one. But what I'm talking about is intoxication. If you are really, 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 really wasted, you cannot contract. Because you're not of sound mind. By the way, I literally ask this question with every mortgage refinance I close. I have to ask the person, are you shit-faced? Of course, I don't ask them if they're shit-faced. I try to be clever along the lines of, yeah, I know it's 5 o'clock somewhere, but has it been 5 o'clock here? What about 4:20? I've actually had one person said, yeah, man, I had some cons right before you showed up. I took the documents and I walked out the door. Because I know that contract is not legally enforceable. You know who also does not have proper capacity to contract? Minors. But there are exceptions under the law that do allow minors to contract. You know who also does not have capacity? Grandma or grandpa, if they're slipping into dementia. They have to be of sound mind to contract. If you attempt to contract with someone who's not of sound mind, courts will not enforce it. Consent must also be present. Both parties basically must want to contract. You cannot be forced into contracting. You cannot be manipulated, coerced, tricked. Yes, I want to buy a car. Yes, I want to give you money. Consent. And last but not least, and by the way, when I give you a quiz on Monday and I ask you what are the elements to have an enforceable contract, this is where people will make the mistakes. The last element, the seventh element, is writing. Sometimes. There are some contracts to be enforceable. They must be in writing.
you have one of those types of contracts that must be in writing, it's not in writing, the courts will not enforce. For instance, anything dealing with the sale of land must be in writing. The sale of goods over $500 must be in writing, etc. We'll go over those when we get to the last unit before the final. Offer, acceptance, consideration, legality, capacity, consent, writing, sometimes. 8 words. Think you can do it? Feel bad for the people who are not here. Hopefully they listen. All right. How did we get to this point? Well, truth be told, the development of contract law was very slow. It took several hundreds of years to evolve. Because, let's be honest, the courts in England originally didn't view promises as being legally significant. The courts didn't think it was worthy of their time to hold people to what it was they promised to do. But things began to change in the 15th century. Back then, the courts began allowing some cases based on a broken promise to move forward. But usually only if money had been exchanged. So if I gave you money and I didn't deliver the goods, because obviously you're already at a loss, so you want to try to make that person whole. But by the 17th century, just before the dawn of America, the English courts began enforcing mutual promises, and our founding fathers adopted that. Here's a good example. Davis v. Mason, 1792 case. Take a look. £200 sterling, not like 200 pounds weight. FYI. Pound sterling was a coin that literally did not weigh 1 pound. It was just the value of whatever was a pound. We good? Everyone get through it? All right. Was this contract too unreasonable for a court to enforce? Yes or no? Literally got a 50-50 shot. You think yes. You think the contract was too unreasonable. Why?
Because it said that if he left the practice and he got dismissed instead of him, leaving on his own.
If you leave or you are dismissed, aren't they kind of one and the same? You are no longer working under? Okay.
And he promised to pay, but he disagreed to not pay.
Okay, Christian?
I'm also going to say yes. While looking at the agreement, I mean, number one, where it says, argue that 14 years is too long and 10 miles too great a distance. Because what if someone, like, do they not care for people's health? Like, what if someone needs to go to a hospital, but 10 miles away, horse and carriage, that's life and death. 1792?
Okay. Anyone else? Anyone else? No one else wants to take a crack at it? What do you got?
I think the contract isn't too unreasonable because Davis and Mason both willing to meet the agreement.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think at that time, like, even though that's like a lot of time and a lot of distance, there's not like a lot of precedent for restrictions and stuff like that.
Okay. By the way, if you get into certain professions, you have to basically sign agreements of non-competing. Actually, a lot of contracts have non-compete clauses in it, where you basically agree not to go to work or compete directly with your current employer if you leave their services. So, yeah, back then, it was kind of common because you're protecting a special trade, and it's common today. Oh, now you're going to say no. You got to flip-flop. Fine. Why no now?
Because they have a mutual agreement, and...
Well, that's what he said.
And he promised to pay, and he violated it, and it's just, it is what it is. Like, he did it, and he violated the contract.
Okay, anyone else? Yeah?
I'll also say that they didn't agree that he couldn't open up anything at all. If he wanted to violate the restriction, just pay the £200.
Okay. So if he does not agree to all the terms, he's going to agree to pay?
Yes.
Okay. Anyone else? What's the offer? What's the offer here?
I'll let you leave if you don't establish within 10 miles or within...
Is that the basis of the offer? What's the primary offer?
£200.
No. What's the starting point? What about the surgeon will teach the apprentice? Ah, so you got caught up in the ancillary terms, the secondary terms. The primary offer is, you come to my practice, I will teach you how to do this. Okay? In exchange for you not competing within a certain radius or a certain time.
So does dismissing him mean that he would never practice?
I don't know. Do you think he learned anything in their time together?
No.
Well, that's what he's arguing. Right, didn't he argue that he didn't really learn anything of significant? Thought that was in there. Oh, I didn't put that in. Oh yeah, there we go. He didn't receive anything worth £200 from Mason. Ah, but who determines the value? What is something of significance? And who determines that? Court determines that? Value is determined by the parties at the point of the agreement. Let me put it to you a different way. How many of you are college students and you agree to come and all of the terms? You basically get classes for free unless you fail, then you have to pay. You also promise to show up to class, take the test, do whatever it is your professors subject you to. In exchange for what?
A degree.
Based on you You're only here to get a piece of paper?
Doing the work.
And by doing the work, you will?
Pass. Education.
You'll learn something. How many of you have learned something in my class? How many of you learned something in all of your classes? Well, I have less hands on that one. Thank you. I appreciate that. So, you're here because you want to be here, because you perceive that you have a chance to learn something. But what is the value of what you are learning? You know, I try making this class at least somewhat practical, so that way, regardless of where you end up, you can apply some of the stuff that you learned here to real life. Do you get that in all your classes? No. So what makes that valuable to you? Well, maybe you like poetry. Maybe you like theater, maybe you like computers. Value is in the eyes of the beholder. And under contract law, that's allowed. So what is he going to get out of it? Well, he's going to get out of it whatever the doctor's going to teach him. Is it valuable? Well, that depends on him. Does he think it's of value? He's trying to argue no, but if he didn't think it was valuable, would he put himself in the agreement to begin with?
Why would he open up another place if he didn't learn?
Because obviously he learned something. Because if you didn't know what you were doing, what could happen to you?
Get sued.
You could get sued for negligence. So yeah, at the end of the day, the court looked at everything and they determined, no, this is not unreasonable. It's not unreasonable. Why? Well, actually, to be honest with you, in the court's decision, the court actually stated, because the value is so subjective, we can't think of a better way to write this agreement. The parties knew how best to make the agreement. And what was the promise? You come and I will teach you, and you will not compete. One party did his promise. The other did not. One party fulfilled his contractual obligations, the other did not. Thus, the one who breached is liable. Davis so got to create keep 200 pounds.
So if it was 10.5 miles, is that the technicality that he could have done?
Yes, that could be a technicality.
10.1.
If it was just outside the radius. By the way, that sounds like a large radius, but think of how big geographically Worcester is, or most towns. 10 miles, yeah, most people during this time. By this time, they were probably maybe not really traveling much more than 50 miles, but 10-mile radius is not that big, particularly when in the English countryside, everything is based on counties, you know, little shires, little villages. So basically, he wanted to have his little territory, so he could have his practice, so everyone had to come to him. And then you have this upstart going in and trying to get in on the action. So because he didn't fulfill his obligations, yes. Whether he learned anything or not, it's irrelevant. You promised to come and stay, you left. For whatever reason. You promised not to compete. You have to be liable. Questions? All right. So what types of contracts do we have? Well, believe it or not, the courts do look at all different types of contracts, and they treat some contracts differently, slightly, depending upon the makeup. Most contracts are bilateral contracts. I promise to do something for you. You promise to do something for me. Both parties are making a promise. The bargain for exchange is promise for a promise. But, there are some contracts that are unilateral contracts. Where one party is making a promise, if
the other party performs. Bilateral. It's promise for a promise. I promise to give you $1,000 if you promise to give me your car. Versus a unilateral contract. One party is making a promise if the other party performs. Here's the easiest example of this I can give you. Back not too long ago, I had a dog. And my dog's name was Perry. Unfortunately, Perry had to get put down after a long life back in Thanksgiving. But prior to that, when Perry was younger, he lived to be 18, by the way, when he was in his single digits of youth in puppydom, he was half German Shepherd, half Beagle. So he legally, literally was a Beagle-sized German Shepherd. And he had the worst traits of both dogs, both breeds. So we thought he was big and tough and he could kick everyone's ass like a German Shepherd. But again, he was a Beagle. So if he got a scent of something, you could throw things at him and he couldn't take him off the scent. So every now and then, we'd go to put him out, and we'd have to put him out on the leash because we didn't have a fence yard. Every now and then, he would break away from me. He smelled something and boom, he was gone. Of course, in the middle of the night, it's not a big deal. Because I had to run on the porch, so I'd go out barefoot. And then I had to go put my shoes on, go out and get a flashlight, and go through my neighbor's yard. Where the hell's the dog? Well, there's one night, he decided he was not going to come back right away, and he was gone. And man, I was heartbroken. Because I love my dog more than I love my wife, my kids. The only thing higher on the threshold might have been my truck. So I decided I needed to put up a poster down at Nick's Variety, a little variety store on the corner, because that's a popular place. And I got a very nice picture of Perry. I put it on the poster, and I said, lost dog. If found, call, $300 reward. How do you get the 300 bucks that I'm promising to pay? You have to perform. You have to find the dog. So Joe Blow can't randomly call me up and say, yeah, if you give me the $300, I'll promise to try to find your dog. That would be bilateral, and there's no way in hell I'm going to agree to that. But if Joe Blow called me up and said, I have your dog, I didn't ask him to go find the dog. He took it upon himself to go and do that. I didn't promise him in advance. That's a unilateral contract. So if he finds the dog and I do not pay, I'm in breach. But if he does not find the dog, I'm not in breach. I don't have to pay him. Because my promise to pay is based on the completion of what I want him to do. Make sense? Any questions on this? All right. In addition to either being a bilateral or unilateral, you also have contracts which legally are regarded as, and by the way, whenever I say I have a K there, I mean contract. That's just abbreviation. You have what's known as an executory contract. An executory contract. An executory contract is kind of like a pending contract. Meaning, at least one of the parties has yet to perform. They've yet to fulfill their promise. An executory contract. FYI, an executory contract where one party performed and the other has yet to, and opts out not to, those are the easiest contract cases to win. So long as you prove that you did what it was you promised to do. The courts will side with you every day of the week. An executory contract, a pending contract, an easier way to think about it, is a lot different than an executed contract. An ex executed contract is a contract where both parties perform. And guess what happens to a contract when both parties have performed? It's dead. It no longer exists. It ceases to be. Why? Because the contract is a promise to do something. And if you already did what it is you promised to do, do you have any other legal obligations? No. No, not at all. Not at all. Yes?
Is the K after just for contract, or is it like actually?
Just contract.
Oh.
If you go to law school, that's just kind of like shorthand.
Oh.
Why did I put it in there? I made this slide back in like 2012. Why haven't I revised it? I don't know. All right. Oh, FYI, before I get on a valid contract, you can have a bilateral executory contract. You can have a bilateral executory contract. Just as you can have a unilateral executory contract. Because technically, all open unilateral contracts are executory by nature until the other party performs. All right, valid contract. Valid contract, in order to have a valid contract, it must satisfy all of the law's requirements for a contract. Meaning, offer, acceptance, consideration, legality, consent, capacity, and writing sometimes are all present. If a contract is invalid, a court will not enforce it. Court will not enforce an invalid contract. Why? Because an invalid contract legally is known as an unenforceable agreement. So if you promise to deliver aforementioned 8-ball, what's the street market of cocaine nowadays? Do they even sell cocaine in 8-balls anymore, or am I just doing like a 1970s movie reference? I don't know. I don't do drugs. I can't help it.
They must, because you see them on the camera.
Oh, all right. So, okay. So like $1,000? Is that too much? Anyway, $1,000 for an 8-ball, is that too low? I mean, I want to be reasonable in my unenforceable agreement here. You know, because if it's unreasonable, you're not going to get the hypothetical. I don't want to say $3 for an 8-ball. Obviously, that's unreasonable. For any amount of money for cocaine, that's illegal. It's an unenforceable agreement. All right. Now, here is something interesting. Depending upon the terms of the contract may be voidable. The contract may be voidable. Meaning, one of the parties can get out of it. A voidable contract is a contract that one of the parties can get out of it. And of course, the moment one party gets out of it, the contract ceases to be. So, for instance, I promise to pay you $20 an hour if you work 40 hours a week for me, and I will give you 3 weeks vacation off per year. I'm making a promise. We have a contract. I'm going to pay you. You're going to work for me. But it's an at-will agreement, and you quit. Can you turn around and sue me looking for your next week's pay? No. Why? Because you have the ability to get out of it. Now, by the way, courts are hesitant to enforce voidable contracts. Because if he can get out of it, are you really, really binding yourself to the agreement? Then you have situations known as a void agreement. This is where neither party can attempt to enforce it. A void agreement. This is where neither party can attempt to enforce the agreement. This typically occurs because whatever the subject matter was became illegal. Some type of operation of law happened. So, if I promise to sell you a chair made out of rare Brazilian wood, and then the Trump administration makes imports from Brazil illegal, and I promise to deliver this chair, you can't turn around and sue me if I do not deliver it, because I cannot get the wood to make the chair anymore. Of course, I would have to give you back whatever collateral or deposit you gave me. But you couldn't turn around and sue me and make me make your chair for you because the subject matter of the agreement is now illegal. Questions? All right. I got two more types for you. There are also what's known as express contracts. Express contracts. The vast majority of contracts are express contracts because express contracts explicitly state all the terms. There's no ambiguity. I will sell you my car for $1,000 and I will throw in the floor mats, the jumper cables. I will make sure you have a good spare tire on it. I will even get the inspection sticker for the first year in exchange for you giving me $1,000. I put everything in there that I'm gonna do. But when I go to deliver the car, I pull out of the middle console a whole rack of CDs, and I take them with me. Can you turn around and go, oh, but, you're taking my CDs. The CDs come with the car. Did I breach the contract? Why not? It wasn't part of the express terms of the deal, right? No CDs for you. Unless I said I would throw them in. Those contracts are short, sweet, easy. Both sides know exactly what they're expected to do. All the terms and conditions are laid out. The ideal contract is a written, bilateral, express executory contract. Did you follow all that? Written. Everything's on paper, so it's not disputed. Bilateral. Agreement between two parties. Express. All the terms are outlined. Executory. It's pending. But you also could have implied contracts. And implied contracts are somewhat tricky. An implied contract is where you might not have an articulated handshake type of agreement, but sometimes it could be mere words, sometimes it could be the conduct of the party that kind of shows impliedly that they were intending to be bound. Now, FYI, people generally don't enter negotiations with the intent to form an implied contract. And truth be told, an implied contract is typically a remedy that the court would impose. So, maybe it's not clear If there was an express contract, because it's an oral agreement, so you don't have a writing that lays everything out, you have nothing more than a he said, she said. But if you can prove that one party did something that clearly shows like they were trying to do something to fulfill an agreement, the court could basically say that's enough. That's enough. So, what type of conduct? Well, say they maintain some type of relationship. You know, after the agreement was formed. So you promised to cut my grass all summer long. We have that as an oral contract. Well, you come to my house a whole bunch of times. And you cut my grass. There's no writing. We didn't write anything down. But your defense is, why on earth, what else would I go to your house, Lamanic, and cut your grass all summer long if we did not have an oral contract in place? Or assumed intentions. So we'll stick with the lawn cutting. I have my house is on a really, really high hill, so you cannot use a typical four-stroke lawnmower when you cut my hill, because the oil pan will be tilt and you'll cause charring in the cylinders, and it could cause it to freeze up, because basically as you cut the grass, your oil is basically not going into the cylinders. So you decide to go out and buy a special lawnmower, a two-stroke lawnmower, that does a better job of cycling the oil through the engine block. So, you go out and buy that just because I have a hill. And you have no other customers that have a hill. So you have no other reason to get it. By contract. You did this assuming that I would pay you all summer long to cut my grass. Why else would someone go out and do this if they had no other use for it? Lastly, if you can just show there's some type of long relationship. So you worked for me for 3 years prior. Why would I suddenly, in the middle of the summer, basically say, no, we never had an agreement. You get all the receipts. I cut your grass for 3.5 damn years, Lamanic. Pay me now. Well, court will look at the evidence and say, there's enough that a reasonable person could imply that there was a contract for it. Questions? All right. What happens if, God forbid, plaintiff, who is suing, alleging breach of contract, cannot necessarily prove the presence of a valid contract? Well, besides implied contract, believe it or not, there are other remedies that the court could use to hold defendant accountable. The two most common are, one, promissory estoppel. Promissory estoppel. Promissory estoppel is used when, first, there is no valid contract. But, one, do I have it spelled out? I do. Defendant made a promise. So again, I'm going to take a step forward before I go full steam ahead. There is no contract present. There is no contract present. You got no actual evidence or proof of a contract. But a promise was made by defendant. A promise to do something. Defendant also, reasonably, knew that once the promise was made, that plaintiff would reasonably rely upon that promise. And three, not only did defendant make a promise, not only did defendant reasonably know that plaintiff would rely on that promise, but plaintiff actually relied on that promise. So they did something banking on defendant performing. And as a result, plaintiff suffered harm. Here's an example. '94, not '19914. God, I'm not going to be alive then. I hope not. I'd be really cranky if I lived to the year 1914. Real case, by the way. All right, poor couple lost their house in a fire. They had Aetna insurance. The agent showed up, they inspected the damage, and the agent said, oh yeah, you have insurance, you have fire coverage. Your policy will cover all the damage, and we will go out and get you a new home. The only catch is, while we are working it through, you have to go out and you have to clear the site of all the debris. So you have to hire a wrecking company, they have to bring the bulldozers in, they basically have to pull everything out of the foundation. When you have a house burn, it kind of falls in onto itself. So you got to clear it all out. You basically got to have the site prepped and ready for new construction. Well, the Andreessens, relying upon what the agent said, went out and hired a contractor, and they suffered $47,197 worth of expenses to clean and prepare the site. Well, lo and behold, as it turns out, the Andreessens actually did not have their insurance because they did not renew. It expired 6 weeks before the fire. Well, needless to say, the Andreessens were pissed, but they sent the bill to Aetna and said, look, we would not have shelled out $47,000 preparing the site exactly like you wanted us to if we didn't have insurance. But your agent said we would be covered. Well, Aetna refused to pay, so they sued. So here's the issue. Is the Andreessens going to be made whole for the damage they suffered, relying upon the promise that was made by Aetna's agent? And by the way, we did agency.
We didn't do liabilities for contract. We only did torts and negligence, but if I have enough time, we'll do agency's liability for contracts. So what do you think? Well, here's the thing. Is there a contract present? No. What is the contract? Or what would the contract be? The insurance policy would be the contract. There is no contract because the policy expired. So there's no offer, there's no acceptance, there's no mutual consideration. If you don't have insurance, an insurance company does not have to pay your claim. But they were told they did, and they suffered harm. This is where promissory estoppel comes in. This is a remedy for a situation where there is no contract. Did Aetna's agent make a promise? Yes, we'll fix your house if you prepare the site. Did the agent know plaintiff would rely upon that? Well, yeah, if you work for an insurance company and you go out and make a promise to one of your clients that you're going to make them whole, yeah, a reasonable person would think, yeah, they're going to rely upon that. Did plaintiff rely on it? Yes, they did. What proof do you have that they relied on that promise? This. They would not have engaged the work or done the work to the scale that the Aetna agent required them to. Because, by the way, if you do ever suffer loss, usually the cleanup and the repairs are all in the same contract. You don't have to go out and get an outside contract. So why else would they do this? Well, they got a promise. And is it reasonable that they relied upon it? Yes, they thought they had insurance. Now, by the way, I know today, 2026, you got a little app, you get automatic, you know, policy renewals, and if you sign up and you sign your credit card, you allow them to automatically pay, you get a discount. I know that. It did not exist in 1994. You used to have to pay the old-fashioned way. By the post office. So, it's wrong. A reasonable person would think if they were told they had insurance. A reasonable person would try to follow any instructions provided them so they can get a new house. They did. They should not suffer this damage. The court forced Aetna to pay the entire bill. Now, did they get a house out of it? No. That would be unreasonable. That would be unreasonable. But the court made them whole for what they relied upon. Questions? So again, the key, promise, reliance. Okay? Promise, reliance. The other option is called quasi-contract. Quasi-contract. Quasi-contract is another situation where there is no contract. Court can't find an implied contract. But a court will use a quasi-contract if plaintiff can show they already did something for the defendant. So promissory estoppel is based on where the defendant makes a promise to the plaintiff. Quasi-contract is where the plaintiff performed. They did something for defendant. And they were not doing this as a gift. Plaintiff gave the benefit to defendant, reasonably believing they would get some type of compensation. In other words, defendant would do something for them. So in other words, defendant is walking away with a big wad of cash. Well, that's not right. That's kind of stealing. Especially when defendant knew the only reason why they were getting whatever it was that plaintiff gave them was because defendant obviously kind of promised to do something for plaintiff. So what will the court do?
court would impose what's known as quantum merit. Quantum merit. Quantum merit is Latin for as much as he deserves. As much as he deserves. As much as he deserves. In other words, the court will provide the full value of whatever it is that plaintiff did for defendant. Now, FYI, quasi-contract is typically involves services. So it's not usually an exchange of goods. It's usually services. So I did something for you, provided some type of service. And that service is a benefit. So here's my case example. This was from 1987, I think. Keep looking at that clock, and that clock is 5 minutes off. Maybe not 5 minutes, maybe like 3 minutes. Which is point. By the way, these types of agreements are common on the heartland. Because sometimes farmers get too old and they can't farm. So in order for them to make revenue, what they'll do is they'll lease out their lands. But in this instance, it's not an individual, it's a realty company. So they go out and buy parcels and they lease them out. So here we go. Eastwood leased 5,000, give or take, acres of land from PIC Realty in Texas for 1 year. Basic terms, they get to farm the land. So after the agreement was made, Eastwood shows up, spends several weeks, maybe a couple of months, preparing the land. They till the soil, they fertilize it, they weed it, plant whatever crops they're gonna get out of it in, tend to it. Spring, summer, goes into fall, they harvest it. They then prepare the soil for the next year. They renewed the second year. Cycle renews. But during the point when they started negotiating for year three, but they didn't sign on the dotted line, Eastwood preemptively assumed he was going to get renewed. So before the third year lease was made, he goes out and does the preparation work to prepare the soil for the winter so he would be easier in the spring. Well, for whatever reason, they did not come to an agreement. So he prepared the soil, but he didn't get the lease. Eastwood then turned around and sued. He can't sue for breach of contract. There is no express contract. He can't sue or try to get implied contract. Again, both sides have to agree. There's nothing in the facts that showed that PIC Realty did anything to even hint to Eastwood that he was getting a third year. And to make matters even more significant, at the point when Eastwood walked out of the office, they advertised the fields, got someone else to come in, and made a separate contract. But here's the kick. They got more money in the lease than Eastwood had paid. Question. Should Eastwood be compensated? for the fact that he did not get a third-year lease? Yes or no? How many people say yes? Why should he be compensated?
Because first he gave the benefit to the defendant. He reasonably was expecting to be able to lease it, and the defendant knew that they prepared the field.
Okay. What you say?
Yeah, I was going to say that they had already prepared the fields, and they knew, like, the plaintiff, not the plaintiff. Yeah, the plaintiff knew that the defendant had already, like, was going to do the defendant knew
defendant
that
the plaintiff. Knew
the plaintiff. The defendant knew the plaintiff had already prepared the fields, and that they were expecting a lease. They didn't say anything to them, because they didn't, they knew that, they might have known that they weren't going to renew the lease, but they knew that they were going to do the work to prepare the fields anyways.
Last one, because we got to...
I say no.
Oh, no, I like this. Why no?
Because they didn't tell him to prepare the field.
Oh! So at no point did they tell him, if you prepare the fields, we'll give you the third-year contract. Didn't say that at all. He went and did it on his own.
He assumed.
And just because you assume something, does that mean it's going to be true?
No.
That you receive compensation for an assumption?
No.
No. But! No contract, no breach. But did he give PIC something of value that they benefited from?
Yes.
Notice how I subtly threw it in? They leased it for someone else for more money. How do you think they got more money? They said the field was already prepared. So did PIC know that they got a benefit?
Yeah.
Yes, they did. Is that fair? No. So for quantum error, you know, I am going to give you a quick quiz, right? You're all packing up. I didn't say we're done. That clock's wrong. It's only 11 past. What was the benefit? Quantum error. So he was paid for reasonable hourly wages for the fertilizer and for whatever it is he put it in. All right, take out a piece of paper. Take out a piece of paper. Come on, quick. Time is short. 12:12, it's almost 12:13. I promise you, this quiz can be completed in 30 seconds. Part number one, spell your name right. So as you are taking your pieces of paper out and spelling your name right, I will tell you a little anecdote that shocked me so much I actually put it on Facebook this morning. I'm driving up the road, and I look at a telephone pole, actually a light post. And I look on the light post, and I see a band sticker. You know, sometimes bands put stickers on poles. And I sat there, and I'm like, whoa, I know that band. The sticker says Short Fuse. And do you want to know why I know that band? Because I was in that band. So, here's my question for you on this wicked hard quiz. What is the best band ever? No, we weren't that good. What is the best band ever? Go. As soon as you are done, you can give me the quiz and you can leave.
Only one.
What is the best band ever? EVAAAH. You can give him paper and then you can go. Bring it.
So they are high priority?
Yes, they had a pet. Quantum Mary. Look, two for the Beagles. That doesn't mean they're the best band ever.
They started something.
Okay. Floyd, yeah, we'll see ya. Maroon 5? Oh, it's a more Beatles. We've got three on the Beatles. No one's got it right yet.
No, we could Rush.
What?
You said Rush. You already said it. That was your favorite. Ooh,
yes, that's a good band. Pearl Jam. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Queen. The Beatles. The Beatles. Well, Beatles by a popular choice, but y'all wrong. Because let's be honest, the Ringo Starr songs are not as good as the George Harrison songs.
I was honestly struggling to think of bands.
Well, I know. You got Maroon 5.
I mean, I had to put something I'm actually listening to. I haven't listened to those old ones.
Yes! All right.